Let me just say, this has been an incredible weekend, and I was hearing last night at your business meeting, having to pass hat, short, all that stuff. You guys need to figure out a way to make this last. You just need to figure it out, because you guys got something really special here. You know, it's been my privilege over the last 14 or so years to be honored and invited to come and do some of this stuff. And I've been at a lot of men's retreats and led a lot of men's retreats, but you guys have something really good here. And you got to fix. Some of you guys have been blessed. God's blessed you. And you have more than your share. And you need to figure out, this is just a 30,000 foot view. You know, you can shoot me later, right? Everybody quits listening right here. But you need to throw an extra bucks in the bag. This is not John and those guys saying, hey, Cliff, make a pitch for us. This is just, I'm just an observer here.
Yeah.
You need to figure out how to make this work, because you got something really special here. You got guys that love each other. And this is, at the end of the day, this is what it's all about, you know. Because I think it was Mertens that said something like, you know, our job here is to love each other and not stop to inquire whether that person's worthy of it or not. Just to love each other. And that's what I've been witness to that this weekend, guys just loving each other. And, you know, I want to encourage you to figure that out. And the guys have been blessed that God's, you know, blessed you and you're in the material world to throw some extra bucks and to make sure this thing survives. Because it really needs, it serves a great purpose. And so that's my two bits for that, all right? So my wife always, so here's the deal. So the whole purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous from the early founders was to get guys like us who are separated from God on self-will connected to God. Hope, that's only, it's the only purpose of AA. Book tells that. The purpose is to help you find a power by which you can live. And I'm a guy that believes this because I'm sitting here today with folks from a lot of different belief systems, a lot of different ways. And I'm always this guy that says this: that whatever your belief system is, Christian, Jew, whatever, whatever that looks like, I'm always reminded, hey, there's more than one way to get to Denny's, right? More than one ways to get there. And I want to share with you what my wife always says, which I think is fantastic. She says, you know, I'm one person. I'm one person. And my family call me Lori. To my friends, I'm Lori. She says, to my husband, I'm baby. You know, to my kids, I'm mom. To the people that I'm supervisor of, I'm Miss Gooding. But I'm just one. I have a lot of different names, but I'm just one entity, one person. And we may call God a lot of different names. And we may have a lot of different ways we get there. But I think here what we do is there's just one power for us. And we may have different belief systems and different ways we get there. We don't have to we don't argue about that. As a matter of fact, we don't ever ask anybody, well, tell me exactly what you believe. Because I think that's deleterious in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it doesn't matter what you believe. Do you believe? Yes, we're moving on. We're moving on here. Because it doesn't matter here. Are you can you believe in something? And I really believe that when we look at Alcoholics Anonymous, and what we've talked about up to this point is desperation. That we come here under the lash of alcoholism and we are beaten. And I'm desperate to do what you lay in front of me, the monkey with cue cards. If you're desperate enough, I'm in. And we go 1 through 9 and we're ready to get that done. If you're desperate enough, you get that done. And then somewhere in the middle of 9, we begin to do this. We just begin to gradually start to, what the book talks about, resting on our laurels. So we get connected with God and we get this spiritual awakening, or we get this euphoric feeling, hey, we're in, we're doing good. And we lose the desperation when we hit 10, 11, and 12. I don't have the same fervor because you know what? I'm not dying now. I'm not dying and I'm living. And so the question I think I have to ask myself, and I think we all have to, now that I'm here and now that I've got this power in my life, why am I not continuing to connect with that power, which 10, 11, and 12 suggest that we do? Because, you know, if you read Wilson's article in The Language of the Heart that he wrote about emotional sobriety, you know, Bill Wilson went nuts at about 22 years sober, just insane. All based on this idea that my connectivity with God, where is it? Where does that lie? Where do I get, you know, have I gotten here and am I resting on my laurels? Am I doing the things necessary? And what we see in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm just going to share from my own experience, what happens for a guy like me here is I get connected to God, and somewhere in there, the resurrective power of the alcoholic ego returns. And I'm just going to tell you how it looked like for me. At about 9 years sober, I went crazy. And I don't mean I went crazy and I drank and all that. But at about 9 years sober, what I began to think of, this is all about me. What happens is we get sober and somebody lets us chair a meeting, we become GSR of a group, and suddenly we think, we're running AA. You know, I'm the guy. Right? I'm that guy again. And at about 9, 10 years sober, right in there, I became very didactic, very evangelical about my approach to Alcoholics Anonymous. That if you didn't do it this way, you were wrong. You know, and I think I shared with you guys, I would chase people down after meetings. I would do this and say, you're killing people in AA. You're talking about that 11-step nightly review, and you're saying it's the 10th step, you're going to kill people in here. That's wrong. I talk bad about your group. I would talk bad about you. They don't do. I'm a disunifier in AA. And I'm going to tell you, I just rotated out a chair in our area conference, about 1,800 people. I'd moved the conference from where it was. I moved to this bigger hotel and spent a whole 2 years all over the state getting people come. And look what I did. Look at what I did. You know? And I just was elected the alternate area chair. I mean, I'm making a name for myself in an anonymous program. So, which ought to give you some kind of clue how sick I was, right? Used to be an old guy down in Dallas. His name was David Aronofsky. He's long since passed away. He was trustee at Large U.S. He was about 5'4". He was a dentist, and he was a power driver. He was a force to be reckoned with. He loved Alcoholics Anonymous. He used to say this, who wants to be the head sick anyway, right? I mean, who wants to be the head sick? That's what we're really talking about here. I want to be the sickest guy in the room, and I want to be in charge of those guys, right? I mean, but I forget because I've given these gifts. I've been given the gift of sobriety. I had the desperation to come here and seek God. And now suddenly I want to detach from that and begin to believe this is all about me again. And I'm going to tell you, you know, I had people that would talk to me about, you know, and I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear it. And one day I came home and my wife said, hey, I need you to sit down. I need to talk to you. I said, okay. Maybe I can help her a little bit here. She obviously needs my good counsel. I'm available. You know? And she said, she just looked me in the eye. She goes, I don't know you. You're physically sober, but you're not spiritually sober, and you're not emotionally sober. And at 9 years of sobriety, thinking I'm really somebody, she looked me in the eye and said, and you got to go because I'm going to have a sober home. And that means that's not physically sober. That means emotionally sober, spiritually sober. And you can't live here anymore until you become that. And at 9 years sober, a big shot in AA, I got thrown out of my house again. Not because I drank, not because I did anything like that, because she has some principles that she needs to live by today. And I think about how much that woman loves me to be able to do that for me. And if there's ever been problems in my household, it has never been her. It has always been me. It has always been me from the things that I've shared with you guys this weekend. You know, it's a wet paint sign. Okay, I need to touch that and just see if it's really wet paint. Don't press this button. Let me just see what happens when we do that. You know, oh, you need help. Let me get your number. Let me see. I can help you. I mean, I've made every mistake in Alcoholics Anonymous you can make, and that woman has done nothing but love me. And she has loved me enough to set me down and tell me the truth on more than one occasion. And I just looked at her, and I didn't argue with her. I didn't try to. I mean, in that moment, God graced me enough to say, okay. And I went and packed a bag, and I went right to my sponsor's house. And I sat down with Don, and I said, you know, Don, I'm in trouble. And he goes, I know, man. I know you're in trouble. And we've been trying to talk to you about it, and you just can't hear it. Because I think I'm doing good. It's a crazy thing about the alcoholic ego. It's the crazy thing about this illness that we suffer from. It gives us the perception problems. I can become delusional again in sobriety to believe that I'm doing good. I start believing my own thinking again that I'm doing good and I can't hear the people when they're trying to tell me. You know, it's like people we talk about that drink. You know, they say, I'll see it coming. I'll see it coming. And you know, the deal is, I'm in a ditch and I never saw the train hit me. Bam, the train hit me and I never saw it coming. And what happens, I believe, for a guy like me in Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't take much. I just get one degree off. And again, listen, this is a program built on the premise we strive for spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. But I think it's got to be perfect. And I think that I have to be the perfect AA member. And what I need you to do is look at me, look at me, look at me. I'm the perfect example. And my life blew up at 9 years of sobriety. There's nothing perfect about it. The only thing perfect about it that I was insane again. And the blessings of that is I just didn't drink. I just didn't drink. And I sat down with Don that day and I said to him, hey man, Don, I'm in trouble. He said, I know, Cliff, we've been trying to talk to you, but you just can't hear it, man. And it was you know, you ever said anything to your sponsor, and as it leaves your mouth, you think, man, if I just change the conversation right now, they might have just missed that what I said. You know, I'll just change it some other way. And I remember out of my mouth came, I got to get back to basics. And it's like God himself just kind of stood beside me with a little silver hammer and went, ding. And this thought came to me, and I thought, my God, it's all basics here. That's all we have here. There's none of us ascend to guru status. Right? None of us become the exalted leaders in AA, trusted servants. And I mean, I was just mortified in that moment. You know, it's like when you realize the devastation. You know, when you get to, you realize in three that, my gosh, I see some evidence it could be me. And four, you think, oh, holy crap, it is me. It's that kind of devastation, looking back, but it's in sobriety. And you see the devastation you've run in people's lives in sobriety with nothing to numb it, with nothing to take the edge off, and you're standing there just thinking, I've done it again. I've done it again. And I'm going to tell you, I went and lived with a guy for like 3 months, and finally one day Lori called me. She said, I think I'm ready for you to come home. And we would just date. I would go take her to dinner once a week, you know. But she would get intelligence, you know. She's out picking up intelligence. How's he doing? You know, she's running the AA grapevine. You know, how's he doing? How's he doing? And I just gave her respect, man. I just went and did AA. Back to basics kind of thing, which is all basics. All we got is trust God, clean house, help others. That's all we got. There's nothing else here. If you're in AA and you're looking for the sprinkles, the secret formula, you want to get some pixie dust and throw it in, we don't got that. You come here with a problem, you know what we say? Well, you need to pray about that and go help somebody else. That's all we have here. You need to pray about that and go help somebody else. I got a problem with money. Really? You need to pray to God and you need to go help somebody else. I got a sex problem. Really? That's horrible. You need to pray about that and you need to go help other people. As a matter of fact, throw yourself harder into helping other people. That's what the book says. If this is troubles, if sex is trouble, we throw ourselves harder into helping other people. That's all we have here. So I can become really disconnected here. And what happened to me was that implosion of self, because I think that's what happens to us in step one. That we have this implosion of self. Because everybody in this room and the time I've got to visit with you in the small groups and just visit with you, I heard all these stories about what happened to us externally. Jails, prisons, institutions. And I never heard one person say, and oh my gosh, I quit drinking and the lights came on and it was just wonderful. External consequences are really good when it helps us to use the crowbar to make a decision in three. But external consequences has never been sufficient to propel me to change the way I live. It had to be an implosion of self internally. There had to be something in here that gave way, that broke. And I'm going to tell you, that breaking once again at 9 years of sobriety with nothing else, the surrender and the pain that that caused was tougher than the pain that was caused when I came crawling in here at Alcoholics Anonymous at ground zero. Because I had to deal with all that. And so I tell you that story because what happened for a guy like me is I'm giving lip service to 10, 11, and 12. Oh, I'm helping people. I'll go do a treatment center commitment. But am I really doing it for the right reasons? I think early on I probably was somewhere in there. I got skewed in my thinking that I'm going there because I got something to say to these people. And so during that implosion, I had to really take a hard look at my life in relationship to what have I been doing with this gift that I've been given. God has blessed me with this gift of sobriety. And I'm a guy that believes this. Look, I don't think we're chosen. I think the grace and God's blessing falls on the alcoholic drinking or not. That's just how my power rolls. But what happens, we're selfish alcoholics. The gift is given to everybody that walks through our door. It's a gift. Grace has fallen in. But you get us a couple of days away and we'll shut the window on grace because we take self-will back. God never shuts the window on grace. I shut the window on grace. And we have been fortunate, because I don't believe in luck. Luck is a religion of the lazy. What I believe we've had is somebody crawl through the window for us while we're trying to get to step one. Somebody was practicing step 12 and they crawled through the window and they got to us while grace had the window open before I shut it. And they carried us a beneficial message in that moment of implosion of self when we could hear it. Yeah. In that moment when God cracks our hearts and let us stand in the crevice and for the first time maybe ever, we see ourselves for exactly who we are and what we are. And that person gets through that window of grace and carries us a message and we're able to hear it for the first time, maybe, ever. And that's the only reason I believe we're here today. That somebody got through the window for us and they carried the message. In that moment of grace, in that moment of pain, they came through to us. So why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we be so vigorous in our practice of 10, 11, 12 as the desperation we had at 1 through 9? Because it's now my experience is that I can't stay sober on 1 through 9. I mean, it'll sustain me for a minute. But what happens is I start backtracking through the steps. Somewhere in here, I'll take my own will back. I'll go insane again and I'll drink. And I'm going to tell you, everybody in this room, whether you've been here for 100 days, or 40 years, you've witnessed people come to AA and do that. You've watched them come here, have an awakening, go back to sleep, walk out the door. You've watched it. You've had seen it happen. Friends of yours, people that got sober with you, you've watched them come here, get sober, have an awakening, go back to sleep, walk out the door and drink again. It's happened. Because what happens to us? 10, 11, 12. What's the one place alcoholics can't live? The moment. We can't stay in the moment. Why? Why can't we stay in the moment? We're time travelers. I'm a time traveler. Busy. I'm going to go out there. And 10, 11, 12 talk about keeping us the one place we can't be, the here and now. Just listen to what the steps say. When you read out of the book, when you read the book, what does it talk to us about doing step 10? Watch. Watch for dishonesty, resentment, selfishness, fear. Watch. Now, if I'm going to watch, where do I have to be? Here. Right now, I got to be in this moment. If I'm watching, I'm watching my behavior, I'm watching my conduct. I have to be in the moment. 11, what does it talk about? Talks about a connection, right? That we continue. If I'm going to continue something, where do I got to be? Right here. Got to be in this moment. I got to be right here, right now. I got to be in the moment. And I'm looking at my life from that idea of prayer meditation. I'm looking at it right here. I'm here. I'm in the moment. What does 12 talk about? It talks about practicing. Practicing what? The principles I've learned in 1 through 11. When? In all my affairs. If I'm going to practice something, where do I have to be? In the moment. To be right here, right now. If I've got to be honest, I've got to be honest in the moment. Right? Unselfish, I've got to be unselfish in the moment. And what does this tell me to do? It says to try to carry the message of the alcoholics. If I'm going to do that, where do I got to be? Right here. Well, you know, when I'm with you, I'm the best version of me that's possible. I'm the best version of me when I'm with you. Absolutely. All of us are the best version of ourselves when we're with each other. And so what I have to do to the best of my ability, listen, I am not telling you that I'm just like some kind of holy man that's giving you the platitudes. I'm telling you, I fall way short. What I'm telling and suggesting you that 10, 11, 12 give us perfect ideas that we shoot for. Because none of us can stay in the moment. It is impossible for any of us to stay in the moment. We'd have to go to our rooms and sit. I don't need contact with anybody, right? But that's what it asks us to do. It asks us to, if we want to try to be better and stay connected to God, then I have to be a person that has to do the things, be constantly reminded to do the things necessary for me to do that. Because I have experience of what it looks like for me to not do that. And I'm going to tell you, I believe this with all my heart, that people that are deeply passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous, people that are deeply passionate about God, people who believe that their life has been salvaged out of the wreckage, the shipwreck that Wilson talked about at the first in the book, you know, the great survivors of the great shipwreck. I believe for people like us is that we are so passionate, there comes a point when we get evangelical about Alcoholics Anonymous. And the trick for people like that is that you don't drink. Because what happens, and I've watched it happen, I've had guys, sponsors, go through the same stuff, and I watch them, and I share my experience with them, and I just pray they make it through it. That's the deal. People come to me and say, man, I'm really worried about so-and-so. And I tell them what I heard Bob Darrell talk about one time, what Clancy said about him. He said, I'm really worried about Bob. And Clancy said, well, if he makes it through it, he'll be all right. But if he makes it through it, he'll be all right. You know? Because when we're in that spot, we can't hear it. You know, I just share my experience and just let God be in charge of all that. You know? Just let God be in charge of it. I can't make anybody find God. I don't have that. I can't give them a spiritual enema. Right? I mean, I can't do it. You know, I've tried to force feed the book, a suppository for me. I can't do that. You know. I'm a firm believer of what that textbook talks about, that if a man's to find God, it must come from within. I'm a believer of that. You know, and I used to be that guy say, I'm giving you this four-step assignment. 2 weeks, be at my house. We're doing it. And I don't do that anymore. And look, I'm not saying whatever you do that works for you, if it's working for you, stay with it. But I'm a believer in this book when it says if a man's to find God, it must come from within. You got to be desperate enough to want to do that. And what I do today is say, here's the four-step. Let me know when you're done with it. Because you're either going to do it or you don't. You're either going to get in enough pain and you really want to find God, you really want to do something different, or you don't. And there's nothing I can do to change that. I can't force feed you God. I can't make you have this transformational experience. I mean, I can't beat that into you. Although, God, I used to try. I'd just 12 stomp you. That's what I would do. For me, it's unattractive. And I just don't want to be that guy. I feel like sometimes I need to buy a plane ticket and go to some conferences that I've talked to back during that time and just make an apology. You know, just say, I'm sorry. Burn those CDs, really, you know. So I want to talk a little bit because I want to kind of end on this weekend. I want to talk because sometimes I believe when we share in meetings or whatever, we go to conferences and hear speakers or we have weekends like this, that newcomers leave with the idea that Gosh, if I get sober, it's just all rainbows and lollipops from here on out. And Will, that's not what Wilson said in the book. He said at the end of his story, he says, we have to perfect, make better, and enlarge, make bigger our spiritual life. Why? For the certain trials and low spots ahead. Certain. Not maybe they're coming, perhaps. 50-50. Certain. People die here. You'll have friends that came today with an overdose and die. They go back out. They die. People get divorced. People get married. You can look at that either way. That's right. Football teams lose. All that stuff. You know, all that stuff happens to us here. And we drink. We don't drink no matter what. You know, we figure out how to live a life that no matter what the external factors of our life is, we learn we can be okay. We learn that I'm okay no matter what's going on out there. You know, whatever's happening right here in front of me, I'm okay. And that only works if I'm in an ardent practice of 10, 11, and 12. When I went through my troubles at 9 years sober, I'm a prayer, but I don't meditate. If you'd ask me straight on, hey, Cliff, do you meditate? You know what I do? I lie. And I say, yeah, I meditate, but I don't. And I'll tell you why I don't. Because I have an old idea about meditation. Anybody here grow up when I did, like in the 60s and 70s, used to watch David Carradine and Kung Fu? Yeah. Snatch this pebble from my hand, grasshopper. And they used to go in that little ashram, you know, and they'd have the pillows down, the candles on. They'd get cross-legged and they'd meditate. And I have an old idea about what meditation. I have a baby elephant idea that that's meditation. I'm a tree stump. I don't bend that way. I can't do that, right? I can't do that. So what I do, I just don't do it. And what I do, I lie. I tell you, dude. You can be liars today, eh? It's perfectly okay. We're full of liars. That's who we are when we get here. We're liars. Right? Liars, cheats, and thieves. It's what we know here. It's how our survival skills. So I lie. And when I had my crash, you know, I had somebody along that way early on. After that period of time, started talking to me one day, and he said, tell me about your prayer and meditation life. And I just, for some reason, I told the truth. I go, well, I pray, but I don't meditate. And he said, well, tell me about that. And I told him, Weed Hopper, you know, I told him about David Carradine. And they go, oh, well, that's certainly a way to meditate, but that's not the only way. And it was like a revelation to me, you know, because I'm too afraid to ask for help. I lost my desperation. We lose that here. I lost my desperation to say, I don't know. I think that's one of those spiritual things for alcoholics. I don't know. It, closely with, I need help. Followed shortly behind, I can't afford that. Right? That's really spiritual, man. Right? But I just told him, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to do that. And he talked to me about contemplative meditation. And he had me get this, he encouraged me to get this little book, and I got it. And he said, I want you to just give yourself 5 minutes in the morning. Just give yourself 5 minutes in the morning. Get this little book. It's got just a little bit, it'll have a little short story, about 4 or 5 lines. Just read that, and I want you to just contemplate on the lesson or the principles embodied in that. That's all you got to do. Just do that. And he said, yeah, I want you to commit me to do that for a month. I said, okay, I'll do it. So at 10 days, what happened to me was I'm doing the little meditation every morning. And this thought came to me. I wonder how this relates to the principles in the book. So at the end of my 5 minutes, I went and got my book out and started looking through, trying to find in the big book. And so now I'm at like 10 minutes. And I'm finally going, oh, okay, I can see how this all intertwines. And I was at a deal out in Oregon, and I met a guy by name Steve L. My buddy Jay Mack knows Steve Lamb out in Los Angeles, Redondo Beach. And he and my wife, we became very good friends, and he was talking about meditation. He talked about these books that he used. And my wife said, hey, I'd like to have that list. He said, well, it's like 100 books. He said, I'd like it. And so he sent it to her, and I said, give me that list, you know. And so I just thought, well, I'm just going to pick a book off here. And so what happened to me was, is that I got one of the books off Steve's list, and I kind of incorporated my little 5 minute and searching the big book. And then I read here, and it referred to another book. Well, I don't know how you guys are, but I just don't read that book. And when I'm done, then I'll move on. I got that, I go, what the hell does that say? So I had to order that book. And so before long, I had like 50 books on my wife's kitchen table in there, you know. And she goes, I need my table back. And what started out as 5 minutes is that over the course of about a year and a half, 2 years, it turned into an hour every morning. And this, I got thirsty for God. And I began to spend the time necessary for me. And I think if you're not a meditator, if you're a liar like me in AA, that's okay, man. You just need to know that's okay. That you can start right now. You know, right now. And if you do 1 minute a day in meditation, you're already way ahead of where you were the day before. Because I believe this, that once we tap back into God, once we get back in there, we get spiritually thirsty again. Because that's what Jung told to Bill in 1960 when Bill wrote a letter to Carl Jung to thank him and say, you know, because you passed that message along to Roland Hazard, we kind of consider you a co-founder of AA. Jung wrote back. You can look this up on the internet. You can see the letter between Jung and Wilson. Jung wrote back to Wilson. He said, you know what? He said, I remember Roland. And he says, and he kind of talks about it. He said, what I see here is the basic thirst of the alcoholic is a thirst for God. Spiritus contra spiritum. Spirit drinking versus spiritus, God. Spirit versus spirit. And I got into this practice of meditation. And I'm going to tell you, I don't do it perfect. You know, there are some days I get up and I'm rushed because I got a busy day. But I still give myself the 5 minutes in the morning and I commit myself that when I come home, I finish it in the evening. And if I do exactly what our textbook talks about, it says this idea that, you know, when we wake in the morning, we look at the day ahead. And I look at my schedule that day and it's pretty packed. And I think, you know what I need to do here? I've got a little bitty break here. I need to spend that time with God because I got a busy day today. And I shut my door and I tell him to hold my calls. And if I just get 10 minutes of just sitting quiet and trying to just contemplate God for that minute period of time and try to get my mind just to stay with me, not venturing off what I got to do next, not regretting what I didn't do yesterday, just be okay that I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I think one of the biggest things that happens to us in Alcoholics Anonymous at some point in our sobriety, early on as we advance through, we come to this spot that we see other people around us. Maybe they see them that the perception is they're doing better than me. And we think my spirituality is not where it needs to be. And I share with you what somebody shared with me one time. They had me get my book and I brought it to them. They said, show me that chart in there where it graphs your spiritual progress. You know, like at this far in sobriety, you must be this spiritual, right? I go, it doesn't exist. He said, you are where you are. And wherever that is you just, that's where you are. I can't come here with 100 days sober and know something that a guy at 30 years knows. I can't do that. I can't be here at 5 years sober and know something that a guy has at 15 years sober. They're 10 years ahead of me on the spiritual journey. We do that all the time. We come here and want more than we have, but we're not willing to set the sacrifice to get and attain that and get on that path that leads that. We just, because we're selfish. I just want that. Spiritual growth and connection with God takes work and sacrifice. I mean, there's no way to cut that. You know, it takes dedication. But what does our textbook tell us? It says we allow God to discipline us in the way we just outlined. Discipline is not bad, right? We think of discipline as punishment. If we all said today, hey, we're all going to be in a marathon, we wouldn't just go out and run 26.2 miles a day. We're going to start with maybe we're going to do a half a mile, maybe walk it at first, right? We enter into a discipline of how we're going to practice to get where we're going. And that's what we're talking about here. We get in a discipline. We allow God to discipline us into a practice to help us get where we're going. And that is connectivity, that this constant contact that our book talks about, which none of us are going to be perfect at. I certainly fall way short of that. But I'm on the trail. I'm on the path. I'm in the game, man. That's the deal here. I got to get off the bench and get in the game. And the cool part about that is you don't have to wait for the coach to put you in. You just get in the game. That's the deal here. You just get in the game, man. And you get this, you just begin the path to getting this connectivity with God, and you begin to deal. And I'm going to tell you, the connectivity to God, that still doesn't guarantee me my life's going to be all rainbows and lollipops. Having a connection with God, that doesn't mean I'm immune from life. It doesn't mean I'm immune from the hardship of life. What it tells me is that I can adjust the sail in rough going. In rough winds, I can adjust my sail that it goes with the wind, that I don't have to fight it anymore. I have a design for living that really works. That's what our book tells us, right? In rough going. Because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous prepares us for. I have a daughter who is 33 years old. I haven't seen her in 6 years. She came to, she went to school in New York. She was a dancer. She went to Marymount. She went on scholarship. She was very, very talented. Her mom and I divorced when she was like 5 years old. And, you know, I did everything a dad was supposed to do, or to the best of my ability. You know, there was a period of time when I was an active alcoholism, not so good. And then I got sober. I tried to do everything I was supposed to do. I showed up for everything I was supposed to do. I paid when I was supposed to pay. I did everything I was supposed to do. When she went to school, I went 4 times a year to New York to spend a week with her at a time to be the best dad I could possibly be. But I only control one side of that coin. It's only one piece of that puzzle. I don't. She has deep-seated resentments about that. But I just tried to show up and be the best dad I could. I tried to set her down, make amends to her the best that I could. And she only began to call me when she needed me. And when school was over and I wasn't paying for anymore, I just didn't hear from her. And when she was in New York, she got hooked on pills and started drinking. And she came home, and about 9.5 years ago, I got a call from her. And she said, "Dad, I can't stop drinking. I can't stop eating pills." And I said, I did what you men taught me to do. I said, "Honey, I can't help you, but here's the number of a lady, and she can help you." And you taught me that for this reason. Alcoholism almost killed me. If I get in the ring with hers, it'll take me out. Yep. It'll take me out, man. And so I did what you told me to do. I gave her the name of a lady. And she called her, and she came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and she began to change, you know. And somewhere in there that she just got better. And then the gifts of AA, she met a guy in AA, and she got pregnant. It's just the gifts of AA, man. So I'm all the time. Who, by the way, is a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a solid guy. And he's the father of my granddaughter, and I love him. And she celebrated 1 year. The next day, she gave Lori and I and our family this beautiful granddaughter, Ellie. And then about a year later, she came to me. She goes, I don't think I'm alcoholic. I think I had a problem with pills." And I said, "Hey, you know, everybody's got to make that decision on their own, but I just need you to hear me here. If you get back like you were, I'm coming to get in the girl. You just need to know that." She said, "You're threatening me." I said, "I'm not threatening you. You were living in your car when you called me. You don't want that for your daughter." And she said, "No, I don't want that." Anyway, we had hired her, and she was my receptionist at my office, against my better judgment. But my wife said, "You know, she's doing better. We need a receptionist to hire." So we brought her on. And I uncovered about a year after this deal, where I don't think I'm alcoholic anymore, I uncovered the scam where she had ripped me off for about $85,000. And I fired her on the spot. And she left her Facebook Messenger open, and I had 2 years worth of drug deals from all of her face that I printed out. And I had to make a decision. You know, if I don't do something about this, and I'm telling every employee in here, it's okay to rip me off. I had to take all that evidence to the district attorney and say, "Like, this is it. You know, this is what it is." And they filed charges against her. And she had, you know, from all that stuff, they filed the 3 best felony charges they had. She got pled in the drug court. When all that was going on, Lori and I went to our granddaughter's dad and said, "This is what's going on, and you just need to help. You need to go get that little girl." And he filed papers to get custody of the girl. And my daughter couldn't show up to drug test. She'd miss her drug test because she couldn't pass them. And that dad got custody, full custody of that little girl. "Why are you doing this to me, God? I'm a good AA member. I've done everything you've asked me to do, right, Mike? I helped guys. I repented. I surrendered again at 9 years. I realized the error of my way. Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to the perfect AA family? Why are you doing this to us, right? We're helping people. That's not God doing it to me. She's an alcoholic, man. She's doing what we do, right? I get to see, Lori and I get to see that little granddaughter. We go pick her up every Thursday at school. She's going to be 9 years old in January, and she's doing great. She's doing, because she's with a loving set of her dad and her stepmom, who I watched her stepmom come in. She's a bad alcoholic, man. She was one of those kinds that would drink, throw up in her drink, and drink it. Yeah, man. Bad. She's my people, bro. She used to come in from the streets, and she'd sit right by me smelling. Just love her, right? Just love her. Now she's my daughter, my granddaughter's stepmom, and she's wonderful. They're wonderful. And they had a little boy, Max, and he's 6 years old now. And he's my grandson. I'm no blood relation to him at all. Right, Mike? He's my grandson. He calls me Papa because that's what my granddaughter calls me. My sponsor said to me, he goes, I don't know where we get this idea that family has to be by blood. So there's good and there's bad here. There's good things happen to us when we're sober, and there's bad things happen to us when we're sober. You know what that's called? Life. Life. Just because we're here doesn't make us immune to that. What it does, it helps us learn how to deal with life on life's turn, no matter what happens to us. No matter what happens to us as life unfolds, we have an opportunity here to do exactly what the book talked about. We get to be a demonstration of God's omnipotence, his unrelenting power, what he can do for us in the face of all kind of calamity. All kind of calamity. And isn't that the good news? Isn't that the good news for people like us who traditionally crawl into a bottle, crawl into a needle, crawl into a pill, crawl into a line? That we have opportunity to show up and be present. You know, you can do a lot of things. You can fake a lot of stuff. You cannot fake showing up. You can't fake that, man. And we learn how to do that here. We learn how to do that. This has been a really good weekend for me. It's been incredible for me to come here and be a part, to sit in your circles, to have opportunity to sit and share from you. And, you know, over the last several years, I've had opportunities in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've had some really great opportunities here. And sometimes we get this idea in Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, I get to be a GSR in my group. I was the area chair, you know. I get to think that this is all about me, you know. I get to think that I'm really something here. You know? And I think some of the point times in our sobriety, perhaps all of us at times have stumbled upon that, you know. We get some kind of platitude. We think because we get some title in AA or we get to talk at a meeting, we get something. You know, we get the big head. We get taken away. We begin to move back to our ego. I want you to think for just a minute about this. Just think with me for a minute. It's Palm Sunday. In the holy city of Jerusalem, it is packed. It is packed. I mean, there's people. You couldn't get another person in the city because Jesus is coming. And they all want us to be there. Everybody wants to be there to see this Messiah when he arrives. And the palms are out, you know, there's flowers on the ground. And Jesus rides up on a donkey. And there's all these people. And the crowd is cheering for Jesus as he comes into the town. What if just for a moment, the donkey believed all that was for him? What if just for a moment? And haven't I been guilty of that? Haven't I been guilty in Alcoholics Anonymous of thinking that this perfect program that saved my life, this perfect program that has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, that's given me opportunities, you know, and taken me places, because it's all about the people. It's not the places I've gone. It's about spending time with you. It's about being here with you. And so, you know, as we close this weekend out, as we get in our cars, get on an airplane and go home, you know, I just want to remember this. I just get to be the ass that carries the message. Thanks, God.